A crony of Vladimir Putin's is unexpectedly demoted. Will others follow? And Ukraine marks 24 years of independence. Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Briefing. My name is Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical Podcast here at RFERL. Joining me here in the studio to discuss the things we expect to make news in Russia this week is RFERL senior editor Steve Gutterman. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks, Brian.
So Vladimir Yakunin's unexpected resignation as chief of Russian railways caught everybody off guard, myself included. Steve, he was, of course, replaced by the little-known deputy transport secretary Oleg Belozerov. There seem to be two theories out there about Yakunin's resignation. One is that in bad economic times, Putin needs to rein in his oligarchs, rein in his cronies, management. He needs better people than his buddies to manage state companies, as Leonid Brzezinski so memorably put it. And that more demotions might be coming. If maybe Igor Sechin's getting nervous, maybe Alexei Miller's getting nervous, who knows? The other theory out there is that this is not what's happening at all, and that Yakunin's being prepped for something bigger. He may become Speaker of the Federation Council. That may be a stepping stone, perhaps, to Prime Minister. What's your take on this, Steve? Because this did just kind of throw us all off last week.
Yeah, it did come out of the blue. I'd say my view is more towards the first theory that you raised. I mean, I think whether it's actually other demotions will follow, I'm not sure. But I think Putin, to some degree, needed to shake things up a little and show that nobody's sacred. As you said, maybe Sechin and Miller, people like that, are a little more concerned about results now. And for this purpose, I think Yakunin is clearly sort of a good choice by Putin, because he really, I mean, he's sort of the most obviously wealthy in the circle. His wealth is obvious, and his kind of ideological grandstanding. These don't really go well, I don't think, with his role as the head of a company that's supposed to be serving millions of Russians every day. And, you know, part of that is, you know, RZD is seen as having been mismanaged under Yakunin. There was this problem where elektrichki, or commuter trains, were cut off. Commuter train service was cut off in several areas. So I think and Yakunin, there are these reports he has a huge mansion outside Moscow with a fur coat storage locker.
Right, Navalny exposed that.
Right, exactly. And so that's the kind of thing that makes him, you know, and he comes out with this kind of grandstanding statements about the West, and you know, they don't really go well with his role as in effect a public servant. So I think that may be one of the main things driving the decision. But whether that means there'll be more demotions, I don't know. It may just be more of a show.
The thing that caught me by surprise with this is, A, Yakunin, there's very few people in the elite closer to Putin. Those guys, those two go back. They were in the fabled Ozero-Dacha community in St. Petersburg in the 1990s, and everybody in that community is pretty tight. This is somebody I didn't expect Putin to take a swipe at, to use as an example. Russian railways is poorly run. In terms of the ideological, his ideological grandstand, I always assumed that was, you know, sanctioned and he was playing his role, his assigned role.
Yeah, it's hard to say. That certainly could be. But in a way, I mean, obviously it's in tune with what Putin is saying and what everybody in the Russian elite is saying and doing now. But on the other hand, you know, again, I think to some degree it's sort of obviously hypocritical, or Russians can see it as hypocritical when he's making these statements, and yet he is, you know, extremely rich and, you know, is refusing to declare his income, that sort of thing. So, you know, I'm not sure. You know, I think maybe certainly these things were sanctioned, but on the other hand, maybe it was time to sort of move him a little bit out of the public eye. And then, you know, it's not like it's a demotion in that case if he's not being I think, look, he's
what
too
post
old
he
to,
gets is important in
right absolutely council. And you know, I think he's obviously, to me, he's too old to be a successor to Putin. Prime minister possibly, but I think that would be a strange sign if Putin is trying to, you know, going into 2018 is trying to freshen things up to appoint this guy who's 67
so it's as keep
Prime
your
Minister.
Money, sit in the Federation Council, maybe be Speaker and just retire.
Right. Or possibly, do something more with his sort of ideological or orthodox those things that he does and his efforts abroad to promote what Russia's doing.
I mean, I would also, and his efforts abroad are quite important. I mean, he runs the Dialogue of Civilizations, which has been one of the main vehicles that Russia's used to co-opt parties of the far left and the far right in Europe and beyond. I would also note that Oleg Belozerov, the man who was appointed to replace Yakunin as the head of RJD, a report in Vedomosti said that the Rotenberg brothers, Arkady and Boris Rotenberg, who are also very close to Putin, lobbied heavily for Belozerov, which doesn't bode well for kind of somebody managing the company a little bit better and a little bit more transparently. No?
Right, exactly. He's he's obviously younger, and apparently he's said to have had some successes, but. Obviously, if you're trying to make a big shift away from cronyism, this could be going even in the other direction.
Well, the other thing we're looking at today, of course, is Ukrainian Independence Day. 24 years ago today, 104 years ago, Ukraine became independent. President Petro Poroshenko is heading off to Berlin today for talks with German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President François Hollande. Over the weekend, Poroshenko implored resistant lawmakers to pass a controversial decentralization plan for the country, which is part of the Minsk ceasefire agreement. It seems to me that the Europeans and the Americans are trying to really pressure Ukraine to tick all the boxes on the Minsk Accords, at least formally. So when the end of the year comes, pressure can be brought to bear on Russia to fill its end of the bargain, namely giving control of the border back to Ukraine. Do you see this is this strategy working, do you think, are there pitfalls here?
Well, there are two pitfalls. I mean, I totally agree that this is what the West wants Poroshenko to do, and it makes sense. Two pitfalls are, one, internal domestic resistance in Ukraine.
Because everybody fears that Russia could turn this into a fifth column if it's decentralized.
Right, exactly. So they fear legitimate fears that Russia will use this to actually gain its lever of influence on Ukraine. And essentially the perception that Ukraine will have sort of given up or given in. The other pitfall is that Russia is not going to accept, Russia will not accept, will not admit or will argue that Ukraine has not fulfilled the Minsk agreement. So this is going to come down to, if these laws are passed, it's going to come down to, okay, Ukraine and the West saying, look, we've done our part.
Right.
And Russia saying, no, you haven't. You didn't consult with the separatists. So this, we don't need to fulfill it. And the question is, what happens then?
Right. Well, then what I think happens is if Russia doesn't give control of the border back, then there's more sanctions. That's I think the card the West is playing right now. I don't see this as the West selling out Ukraine. I know Victoria Nuland went to Kyiv, lobbied for this law. It passed with a lot of difficulty, but it passed. It's got to get a supermajority to get it to pass its final reading. And then you got to pass a whole nother law down the road that kind of fills in the blanks of what this actually means for Donetsk and Luhansk. There's a lot of, but if Ukraine can say it's done this by the end of the year, and the West agrees that it's done this by the end of the year, regardless of what Russia says, the West is thinking, I think, that there's the threat of sanctions if Russia doesn't give the border back.
That's... Right, absolutely. And then, then the question is, okay, Russia, it's not getting what it wants now, as you've made the point very well. And then at the end of the year, it won't be getting what it wants. Sanctions will continue. What is Russia's next move going to be at that point?
And that's where I, to be honest, I think Russia's backed itself into a corner in this situation, and I don't see how it gets out of that corner. But on that note, I guess we'll wrap it up. That's all we have time for today. I'd like to remind you, you've been listening to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at the stories making news in Russia. We'll be doing this every Monday, so be sure to tune in. I'm Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast, and joining me has been RFRL senior editor Steve Gutterman. Join us again next week, and now, as always, I leave you with the soothing sounds of Noise MC.